Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Proverbs. We're currently in Proverbs chapter 15. We come today to verse 19. Solomon says, "The way of a sluggard is as a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway." The irony, where the lazy bum is concerned, is that by trying to make his life easier, he always makes life harder. That's the strange thing. You have heard some good workmen make the statement that it's always easier in the long run to do the job right the first time, because then you don't have to come back and fix your mistakes. That's prudent. The life of the upright offers smoother sailing because they work when they're supposed to work. They work the way they're supposed to work, and they work as hard as they're supposed to work. As a result, things tend to work out much better that way, and they feel better about their work. Let every believer in our Lord Jesus Christ be an honest workman, a good workman, a hard worker. Do it right the first time. And so we will experience, as a rule, that the way of the sluggard is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright, well, that's a highway. That's a lot smoother. Again, this motif in verse 20, a wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish man despises his mother. The point is that a good son or daughter makes his parents or her parents proud, but a foolish one scandalizes them, which is one of the worst forms of mistreatment of one's parents, to humiliate them by one's foolish behavior. A fool, however, is too foolish to care, but a wise son will take note and refuse to act in ways that risk such painful and dishonorable results for one's parents. Folly is a joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding walks upright, the sage says in verse 21. Of all the things in life that help define us, one is the orbit of things that we enjoy. Folly is a joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding walks straight. Fools get their kicks out of foolishness, out of the trivial pursuits of life, out of vain and empty and vulgar things. Campus fraternity or sorority parties, where people get falling down smashed, is the pursuit, for example, of a fool. Kids running around vandalizing property and shooting people with BB guns, that's the work of fools, kids or not. Business people going to a convention in Vegas and engaging in every form of excess, as though a ticket to Vegas was a free moral pass. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Yeah, sure. Not in the eyes of God. The upright take the high road. In verse 22, we read, "Without consultation, plans are frustrated, but with many counselors, they succeed." This is a motif, like many others, that we have seen earlier. We've seen earlier because it is repetition for emphasis' sake, in order to make an impression. Wise men don't regularly act on impulse. Prudent people are not usually impulsive, at least in things that matter. People who are wise and thoughtful are deliberative and they're consultative. That is, they are people who think before they jump, and they ask before they answer, and they seek counsel before they buy the farm. That is one big reason why prudent people are more apt to succeed at what they undertake than the Lone Ranger type, who think they are so smart they don't need any advice from anyone. Just today, about 3 hours ago, I got an email from a person living a long way from here, whom I know very well. This person was lamenting the fact that someone very close to her in her family was in the mode of making a momentous decision about perhaps a job change. But they didn't want to talk about it, they said. They didn't want to talk about it until the change was official. In other words, they didn't want to talk to anybody. They didn't want to get any advice from anybody. They didn't want to get any input from anybody. They just wanted to go out in solitary and in isolation, ponder the decision that they perhaps will have to make, and then make it and tell the world about it. Well, it may go well. It may not go well. But the person who wrote me was lamenting the fact that this generation is different. Somehow, they think they know it all. Well, I would say it's not just this generation. There is a strong tendency in the young to think they know more than they do. But it's not just the young. A lot of people of all ages, young and old, men and women, who are too smart for their own britches. That's the mark of a fool. And they'll split their britches, most likely, because they don't seek advice from people who are able to give intelligent advice. Without consultation, a high percentage of the time, plans are frustrated. But with many counselors, we've got to understand, we mean intelligent counselors, they succeed. We need in all of our undertakings that are of any consequence. It is true, we don't always know the consequence of things. We're not always able to measure them in advance. But there are a whole lot of decisions that we make that we shouldn't make in a corner. We shouldn't make them off by ourselves. We should seek out advice of pastors, wise Christian friends, people who we know from past experience are not afraid to tell us what we need to hear, people we know who have our interest in mind, and people who, about the matters that we may be inquiring about, might have some intelligent input. And most of us have people around us who would be good for that. Maybe not always. Sometimes a decision maybe just has to be between us and the Lord, or between my wife and the Lord. Sometimes there are decisions like that, but that's not usually the case. It's always smart when we see a heavyweight decision coming down the pike to start getting input from wise and godly people. The likelihood is that we'll make a much better decision. We'll find at the end of the way that we landed squarely upon God's will than if we hadn't. That doesn't mean that just because it is God's will that there'll be no bumps in between or bumps when we get there, but we'll have the confidence that we have the will, the counsel of the Lord. Verse 23, chapter 15, a man has joy in an apt answer. And how delightful is a timely word. Oh, that's so good. When it comes to giving counsel, it is immeasurably satisfying to be able to offer the right words at the right time. Sometimes we just don't know. We do the best we can. If we have an opportunity to pray before we give counsel, sometimes a person doesn't even know as they're asking me, I'm praying and asking the Lord to give me wise words. Sometimes we just have to trust that our words are wise because we don't have any specific biblical word to offer except in the broadest general principles. And many a time I've left a session where I was asked to give advice saying, Lord, I just trust and pray that you help me guide that person in the right way. Some things are life conundrums. It takes, it seems, the wisdom of Solomon to give a right answer. Most things are not like that. But when it comes to giving counsel, and all of us will be asked somewhere along the line to do that, it truly is immeasurably satisfying to be able to give the right answer at the right time. Ross said, even if it is the right word, been there, to offer it at the wrong time, done that, it is usually counterproductive. Sometimes we see where somebody is headed, and we know it's a mistake, and in our great care for them, we are over-solicitous, and we offer gratuitous counsel, and not being invited, it is sometimes resented, and then it is counterproductive. We see that kind of thing again and again with parents. Parents see a son or daughter dating someone that they fear at their age they may really get hooked on and think they have a love match, and they take measure of the person's character, rightly or wrongly. They make an attempt and they decide that this is not a match made in heaven. And then they rush in and they impart that to their son or daughter. And actually, they just drive them closer together. How many times have we seen it? It was the right word, maybe, but it was the wrong time. It is counterproductive. Those who are best qualified to produce an apt answer are those who seek and store wisdom themselves. And the primary source is God's own word. And how delightful is a timely word to a wise ear? Sometimes you just hear it. I remember a prime example of that in my own ministry early on. It was 1965. I was into my second year in the pastorate, and another church came calling. I had that at the end of my first year, and then at the end of my second year, another church invited me to become their pastor. It wasn't a big church, as churches go, but compared to the small church which I started, it seemed like a mega church, though it's far, far from any such thing. So in strategic terms, it seemed like that I would have a better platform for teaching the Word of God. So I was very tempted to go. And yet I did not have peace about going. But on the other hand, I didn't have the peace of God about staying. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and the meter was running. And I talked to everybody and everyone that I could. Obviously, I couldn't talk to people in my church, but I talked to people to kind of get their feel for that. That was one of those things where you had to be very cautious. Finally, one day, I called a fellow pastor in our association. The pastor I called was probably 15 years my senior. He was not at all a theologically trained or educated man. He was just a good man, a godly guy, who loved the Lord, was very engaging, and his people loved him. The kind where you just drill and come up with the oil of good old country wisdom. So I called him and I said, Herb, I've got a question. I laid out the situation before him, and he asked me, Brother Jimmy, did God call you to Polka? Oh, Herb, no doubt about that. Well, you say you don't have any peace about going, you don't have any peace about staying. My advice is, stay put until you know God's calling you to the other place. That was so simple. And the minute he said it, it was the right word at the right time. I just knew that was the voice of the Lord. So simple. But I'd made it so hard, because probably I had a prejudice, I had a bias in my own mind. You're young, you're 26 years old, and you want to go to the larger place. It's just that old human ego thing, and it was getting in the way and clouding my judgment. That's why it's good to seek counsel. And when we have an open ear to the Lord, when we have an open ear to wisdom, how true it is that a man has joy in an apt answer, and that was an apt answer. How delightful is a timely word. And it was. I said, thank you, Herb. That's exactly what I needed. I put up the phone. Then I made the necessary call to say that I was staying put. One of our families suffered a terrible accident several years ago. One of their children was nearly killed. It's a long story. I can't tell here. But this person shared with our church how in the first hours of their terrible crisis, she had called one of her friends in the church, and she, as if the voice of God, gave her one piece of apt biblical wisdom after another. And this, she related, was so sustaining to her in those awful days. She knew exactly what that proverb meant. A man or a woman has joy in an apt answer. How delightful is a timely word. Well, verse 24 reads, "The path of life leads upward to the wise, that he may keep away from Sheol below." Sheol is another world. Sheol is the place of the dead. Sheol often just simply means the grave. There are only two ways one can go in life, north or south, up or down. The path of wisdom, the young are reminded, all of us in fact, but this book was especially targeted for the young. The path of wisdom leads one up, and those who take that path elect it because they know there's no in-between. The alternative is a life going south. The alternative is condemnation to everlasting darkness. Joshua once said to the people of Israel, "Choose you this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord," which is the path of wisdom. Right now, my dear friends, whoever you are, you're not parked along the road. Even as I speak, you and I are headed one direction or the other. The question is, which is it? Is it the way of wisdom, which leads to life, everlasting life, and life richer and more abundantly here and now? Are you on what Jesus called the narrow road that leads to life, a road with challenges, a road that is obviously difficult, not difficult to get on, but difficult to walk on because it is a way of opposition? It's a road in which we will be attacked by the enemy. It's a road of challenges. Or are you on the boulevard that looks easy, but actually you're there with the mass of fallen humanity and it leads to death and is really a bed of thorns? One must decide. Wisdom points us to God, points us to the upward path, to the way of Christ. The path of life leads upward for the wise to keep us away from Sheol below, because the way of Sheol is the final repose of fools. Verse 25, "The Lord will tear down the house of the proud, but he will establish the boundary of the widow." We may not see the justice of God executed every day. We don't. But ultimately, the wheel of God's justice, as the German poet said, grinds surely, and in the end, it grinds exceeding small. Payday someday, in the words of a great sermon titled by R.G. Lee. God is the God of the helpless, the orphaned, and the widow. God is the antagonist of the proud. The humble, he will exalt, and the proud, he will humble. That is a principle written in the moral constitution of God's world. Sooner, maybe later, but always certain. One day God will abolish the proud, and one day he will establish justice for all the humble who trust in him. You say humble, it has to be those who trust in him, because those who refuse to trust in him are by definition the proud. In verse 26, Solomon tells us evil plans are an abomination to the Lord, but pleasant words are pure. What he's saying here is that evil plans may be clever and even successful temporarily, but the fact that God abominates evil schemes should remind all those bold or rash enough to form wicked designs against others that their temporary profitability is on a collision course with eventual accountability. Human excess, you see, will sooner or later run headlong into divine protest of the severest kind. As my father always used to remind me, not that I always wanted to be reminded, Dad would say, "Bud, don't mess with God." Didn't want to hear it, but I've never forgotten it. And I'm glad I heard it. The wise will be warned, and they will know that they are overmatched if they want to take on God. Evil plans are an abomination to God. You're going to hit a wall. Pleasant words are pure. God delights in the plans of the pure in heart. Them he will support. Verse 27, he who profits illicitly troubles his own house, but he who hates bribes will live. Play the swindler, we are told, pay the piper. Refuse the take, let God protect your stake. In verse 28, it is written, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. All of which is another way of saying the righteous thinks before he speaks. He ponders what is right to say, when it is the right time to say it, and how to say it. On the contrary, the wicked are rash and reckless and thoughtless, and they gush forth words like foul water from a storm drain. It is good, folks, to remind ourselves here that when it comes to wisdom and folly, righteousness and unrighteousness, it is not a black and white picture with any of us. In all of us, there is a residue of some foolishness and some unrighteousness. These proverbs are some of God's prods to drive some of those things out of us. They are mirrors, to change the metaphor, to show us the folly that may still reside in us and prompt us to reject it and turn away from such habits. Verse 29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. If you want to hear an elaboration of that, go to Isaiah chapter 59, which amplifies this whole thing. God closes his ears to the wicked, or those acting wickedly. God will not honor the petitions of those who dishonor him. I don't care if you call yourself a Christian. If you're dishonoring him, your prayers are bouncing off the throne, so to speak. But he welcomes the prayers of those who in faith obey him. In their cases, even his no's are better than our yeses. God will answer us according to what is best for us, we must always understand. The main thing is, the Lord is attentive to the prayers of the righteous, but he just flat out abominates the prayers of the wicked and the hypocrites. Verse 30, bright eyes gladden the heart, good news puts fat on the bones. Bright eyes here are a metonym for the joyful face of a friend bringing good news. Good news cheers the human spirit, which in turn has a positive effect on the body. That's another indication of psychosomatic influences. High spirits enhance good health. As we can, in truth, faithfulness, we want to build people's spirits. Verse 31. He whose ear listens to life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. Another ringing of the changes about the importance of accepting discipline, either in the form of verbal correction or corporal discipline. To hate is, in effect, to hate oneself. For in disregarding discipline, one is mistreating oneself. The effects are self-destructive. In life, people who can't learn can't progress, and those who go with it, grow because of it. A good head without two good ears, I've said over and over again, is about as useful as a carpenter without hands. The fear of the Lord is instruction for wisdom, and before honor comes humility. The fear of the Lord is the gateway to wisdom. It means humble submission, which takes the form of the hatred of evil, hating what God hates. Wisdom is the pillar upon which the whole superstructure is built. The fear of the Lord is the first expression of humility, of knowing the greatness of God and the puniness of man, of understanding our complete dependence upon him, of grasping our fallenness and his grace and mercy. God elevates the humble. He will always in time abase the proud. In short, if we are wise, we know God, and we know one descends up. Thank you, friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.